Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Frank Leone. I represent the appellant in this case, Roberto Castro Lopez. And the issue in this case, I think, is fairly narrow. It is whether or not it was plain error for the district court in this instance to determine that Mr. Castro Lopez had a criminal history category of 2 based on 2 juvenile adjudications from Arizona where there is no right to a jury trial. There's 2 cases which are cited in the briefs which we contend establish that juvenile adjudications where there is no right to a jury trial or a jury review or de novo review cannot be counted towards determining criminal history category.
That's not what they say. They say that they can't. They need to be proven to – the existence of the conviction has to be proven to a jury. Isn't that what they say?
I'm sorry, Judge.
They don't say that the juvenile convictions cannot be used. They say that they are subject to Apprendi and therefore need to be – the fact of the conviction has to be proven to a jury.
Correct, Your Honor.
That's quite different.
Well, it's not –
It doesn't mean they wash. They're not out of existence.
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, that the Washington case, which is the second case which we cited, says it takes it a little bit further than that, not just that the conviction has to be proved to a jury, but it can't be counted either for calculating criminal history. And that's what the basic problem here is, that because of the criminal history calculation that was done the fact that anything over a criminal history category of 1 disqualifies Mr. Castro Lopez for safety valve treatment. Now,
First of all, we have a prior opinion on this issue, don't we?
Yes.
What about it?
I'm sorry.
We have a prior opinion on this issue, do we not?
On this particular issue,
yes,
Labrador?
Yes, on whether or not for the safety valve there has to be you can use the juveniles, or you need to – whether Apprendi applies to the
I believe that the Washington opinion is the opinion that controls in this instance. In that case, you had
– What about the Labrada-Bustamante opinion?
I think that's a little bit different because, yes, it does say, for example, that the district court can determine qualification or whether the standards are met for a safety valve. But one of the elements is whether or not the defendant has a criminal history category of 1 or not. And in order to reach that, the judge has to make some determination as to whether or not he has convictions that qualify him beyond criminal history category 1. So necessarily, he's going to have to look at these convictions in order to determine whether or not they can count. If you're looking at adjudication...
So I don't understand what you're saying about Labrada-Bustamante.
I'm sorry, Judge.
I don't understand what you're saying about Labrada-Bustamante, why it's not controlling here.
Well, because it would be because there's at least 5 elements in the safety valve. One of them, as I say, has to do with criminal history category. The rest of them have to do with determinations that the judge can make based on his observation of the case, the pre-sentence report.
Why are they different with regard to the Apprendi question?
They're different because in order to determine whether or not he's a criminal history category more than 1, the judge has to look at those convictions and decide whether or not they
can
be countable.
And in order to decide whether he's cooperated, the judge has to look at the facts about whether he's cooperated.
But in this instance,
so why isn't it an all or nothing? There are 5 requirements, and either they have to go to a jury or they don't.
Because in this instance, the only reason the judge decided that this defendant did not qualify for safety valve was because he was a criminal history category 2, not a 1. That controlled pretty much the thought. And even though there's some discussion about wanting to qualify him for other safety valve considerations, the judge says it doesn't matter what I do, that criminal history category 2 is what disqualifies him outright. And so that is, it seems to me, the reason why those convictions have to be countable and they don't qualify under Apprendi or under Washington, which this Court decided in 2006. That In that case, you had juvenile adjudications that were being considered to change a criminal history category from, I think it was a 1 to a 5.
Our problem here is an Apprendi problem. Is that not true? Your problem
it
with
is,
these convictions
is an
Apprendi
problem.
Is an Apprendi problem?
Yes.
Okay. So I need you to tell me why, I mean, if it's an Apprendi problem, Apprendi and Elaine and all of those cases essentially say that there's an Apprendi problem if you're trying to increase the maximum sentence. Here you're not trying to do that, you're trying to decrease it, right?
Yes.
So why isn't that the reason why Apprendi doesn't apply?
Because of the effect that it has on the calculation of the criminal history. The criminal history, and this Court said in Tige, the reason prior criminal convictions are countable is because a jury has made the determination on those prior convictions. Either that or the defendant has pleaded guilty. In this instance, you don't have that. Prior juvenile adjudications in Arizona are not decided by a jury. They're decided by a judge. And so in Tige, that's exactly what this Court said. You can count those prior convictions because they have been decided by a jury. In this instance, in order to even reach the calculation for criminal history, you have to look at whether or not the person has more than one conviction, and if that conviction takes him out of criminal history category 1. In this instance, you don't have a defendant who makes an admission with regard to that prior conviction. It certainly wasn't determined by a jury, because in Arizona, that's not the case. In a lot of other jurisdictions,
to be honest, you're not discussing anything relevant here, which makes it very difficult to have this argument. The relevant question is, does Apprendi apply to the safety valve in general? And you're not willing to discuss that.
Well, Your Honor, I think it does, for the reason that at least one of the elements of the safety valve requires a determination of whether or not there's prior convictions. If the prior convictions meet the standard and the reason why it makes a difference in Apprendi, it should also do so in this instance. And in those, at least with regard to Apprendi, the prior conviction is the one exception to facts that the judge can consider in order to determine the sentence. In this instance, yes, it doesn't increase the maximum possible penalty, but it disqualifies the defendant from.
And there are four other things that would disqualify him as well in the list, right? He has to have not used violence or credible threats of violence. What about that one? Is that one subject to Apprendi or not?
No. No, I don't think so, because, as I say, in Labrador, it talks about the judge being able to make those determinations based on what he sees, and that's far beyond and much more detailed than what the jury sees. But the prior convictions, which is the first element of the safety valve,
you'd think that would be the least likely to be subject to Apprendi, because Almendares-Torres says in general priors are not subject to Apprendi. So of the five things in this list, you would think, but for Teague, that would be the least likely to be subject to Apprendi.
But the reason you calculate criminal history is based on prior convictions. It's not based on facts that are not presented, for example, in this case, as part of the basic elements of the offense.
Let me see if I understand your arguments. And you basically have two arguments. One is that the sentencing guidelines were incorrectly found, correct? And because the judge coming to Category 2 relied upon juvenile convictions for which, at that time, the defendant did not have the right to counsel. Is that your first argument?
Not the right to counsel, the right to jury trial.
Right to a jury trial. I'm sorry. Right.
Yes.
And this is a plain error case.
Yes.
Right, because this was never raised in front of the. That's your first argument.
Yes.
Your second argument, as I understand it then, is even if it is counted, it wasn't found beyond a reasonable doubt by the sentencing judge.
No.
It's not your argument.
No, that's not my argument.
Okay.
Because I think the judge can look and see whether or not the defendant has prior convictions, and typically they're not contested. And in this instance, for whatever reason, counsel did not object to the use of prior adjudications, even though there was case law that indicated, I refer here to Tige and Washington from this circuit, that says that those cannot be, juvenile adjudications cannot be used, one, to enhance a sentence where you have to prove prior convictions in order to increase the maximum possible penalty, but also under Washington, where you increase the criminal history category in order to increase the sentence. And in this instance, that's exactly what happened, is you have these prior adjudications that don't fit within that exception, if you will, to Apprendi, because they're not prior convictions determined by a jury.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. You've used your time.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Bob Miskell from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Tucson on behalf of the United States. In this case, and this case has to be reviewed under plain error standard, the mandatory minimum sentence and the statutory maximum sentence the defendant faced was established by the facts he admitted at the change of plea. The Court, failing to reduce his sentence based on judicially found facts, does not implicate Apprendi at all.
Well, it would if this was increasing the sentence. No?
If it wasn't, I'm saying it's decreasing. The failure to decrease, though, does not
implicate. Right. So isn't that kind of in the eyes of the beholder, i.e., it's increasing it from what it would be if he didn't have the conviction, because he would otherwise be eligible for the safety valve? That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is that it's decreasing it from what he would what would otherwise be the mandatory minimum. So it's sort of how you look at it.
I would say if you look at the Apprendi line of cases, what they're concerned about, it's a Sixth Amendment case, right to a jury case. And the Supreme Court has made it absolutely clear the defendant's maximum or minimum or anything that increases the sentence has to be found by the jury. That's what the Apprendi line of cases hold. They're Sixth Amendment cases. In this case, and they've expanded that to or admitted at the change of plea, obviously. In this case, what set his sentence was what he admitted to at the change of plea. The fact that it wasn't reduced does not implicate Apprendi. And I don't think it is a two sides of a coin, because he's only being sentenced based on facts that he admitted at the change of plea. And particularly in light of this Court's opinion in Labrada Bustamante.
I mean, but Alain sort of stepped back and took a more holistic view of what Apprendi was about, right? I mean, and the government was making a somewhat similar argument in Alain. That is, this wasn't really increasing the maximum, although it was increasing the minimum.
Right.
And so it didn't count. And the Supreme Court said, no, wait a minute. It actually had a practical effect on what this guy's sentence was going to be. And that's I mean, in a way, this is the hardest subsection of the safety valve to deal with, because it's a prior. But if you take the other four subsections, which involve real facts and things that would ordinarily go to a jury, the impact of not sending it to a jury is that he could be sentenced to more than he would be otherwise without a jury having decided it.
And in Alain, what the Supreme Court said was they always talked about facts that increased the sentence or aggravated the sentence. They consistently used those two words almost interchangeably in Alain. They never talked about facts that would reduce the sentence. They said the government has to prove to a jury, or have the defendant admit a change of plea, anything that would increase the minimum sentence the defendant was subject to. And that happened in this case. He was subject to the minimum sentence because of the weight of cocaine that was admitted to at the change of plea. So it's consistent with the Supreme Court's reasoning and holding in the Alain case. And again, under plain error, there's just nothing that would suggest the district court committed plain error in this case by not expanding.
This statute is not discretionary. You're not arguing that it should be, right?
Excuse me?
The safety valve provision is not discretionary. And you're not arguing that it should be in a Booker kind of way. I mean, previously all of the guidelines were non-discretionary, but after Booker they are. But this is still non-discretionary, right? In other words, if these facts are proven, the judge has to do a guideline sentence.
Her point is that the statute commands the judge to reduce the sentence if the safety valve factors are found by the judge.
It certainly gives the judge the ability to do that, yes. And if
he has, but it's a command. He has to do it. He doesn't have a choice if you find those factors.
I'm actually not sure on that.
355.3F. But anyway, you don't have to argue about it here.
Well, yes. And it says the court shall impose a sentence pursuant to the guidelines if the court finds it sentencing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay. I will agree it says that, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Where I was going with it is that it's therefore, I mean, if not similar to the fix that the Supreme Court imposed on the guidelines in general in Booker, unless we were to impose something similar here. I mean, that would be a possibility to, if we thought there was a problem, to avoid the problem would be to do a similar fix on this. But that would be sort of unfortunate. In other words, all of the guidelines were originally mandatory, right. And the Supreme Court, to eliminate an Apprendi problem, essentially judicially rewrote them.
Right.
Right. No one has suggested we should do that here. But it theoretically would be a possibility if we thought there was an Apprendi problem.
Yes, if there was an Apprendi problem, that would be a possibility. But, again, the government's position is, especially in a plain error review, you can't say this judge committed plain error in light of the existing law in this circuit or with the Supreme Court, for that matter. I mean, it may be something that the Supreme Court or this Court does later on down the line, but I don't see how it can be reached in this case under the plain error standard. Admittedly, Judge Burry recognized that he didn't have discretion because of the way the statute was worded and because of the way the guideline and the statute are worded.
And what both lawyers said to him, but anyway.
Right, exactly. So, unless the Court has any further questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. The case of United States v. Castro-Lopez is submitted.